Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, good day, good day, good people.
Somebody should have told me it would be like
this.
Be like this.
Yeah.
Be like this.
Yeah.
Somebody should have told me it would be like this.
It would be like this. Yo, what's going on? What's going on? It's your boy, Sean Williams here, host for today for another episode of Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by A to Zayas. Again, I'm your boy, your host for today, Sean Williams. I got the usual host, the president of our lovely organization, Ms. Zora Wall. She's on board with us as well.
Good morning.
And yeah, good morning, Ms. President. Well, afternoon, rather. Where we at?
How's it going, Sean?
It's going well. It's going well. So, so today I wanted to talk to you about a very sensitive subject, and I'm going to have a very special guest on with us today by the name of Eric Mayers. He's a renowned speaker in Atlanta, Georgia, also a CEO and entrepreneur and philanthropist doing this thing out there. He'll be joining us today. And the subject that we're going to jump on today is called Post-Black, the Identity. Now, that may raise some eyebrows and cause some confusion in the same breath, but what I want to talk about today in this segment, I want to discuss how the new generation is redefining African-American identity. So that's what I mean by post-black. And
yeah,
I think Eric might be on the line now.
I'm on the line.
Yeah, welcome,
What's
brother.
Up, everybody? Man, welcome, man. So, thanks for having me. Ms. Zora.
Yes, sir.
Good morning,
Madam,
Eric.
Madam Queen.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you know,
got to
give it to her. Got to give it to her.
Yeah, you got to give it
to her. Guys.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So I appreciate you guys joining in. And if anybody else wants to call in and chime in on this discussion, by all means, call in 516-595-8311. That's 516-595-8311. So let's dive right in. Post-black, the identity. What comes to mind, before even just going into it, what comes to mind?
Well, you know what? What comes to mind for me is, the state of crisis, and crisis being the key word immediately. I feel like we are in an identity crisis. We're in the vacuum of leadership where, once Dr. King stood, once W.E.B. Du Bois stood, once, we had Reverend Lowry and Abernathy and all of these great African American leaders, those that we could look up to, and we could say, man, I want to be like Dr. King. And the truth that Dr. King brought to our reality, I mean, it was it was amazing. And this was a generation that, obviously, man, being born in 1983, I didn't really experience that. He was dead long before. However, I grew up in the shadow of his influence. Many of the leaders that came up underneath him were running the city of Atlanta, for instance. Ambassador Andrew Young was the mayor of Atlanta at one time, and his leadership was directly influenced by Dr. King. But now we live in a generation that wasn't influenced by a leader like Dr. King.
And you know what? That's a major point that we're going to touch on along this segment, and I'm actually going to save that to bring that home, because that's going to be the most important part of this whole thing. The first thing, though, I'm going to jump in is I want to talk about beyond the stereotypical image of young black men or young men of color. And
hey,
what
Sean,
I mean by
I
that
just
is
wanna... Mr. Sean, could I just comment before you go any further on the post-black? I just wanted to make a comment. I probably won't comment any more of the show, but I just wanted to say two things.
We need you to come on.
well, I'm feeling kind of under the weather, but when I think of the post-black, because, there's post-black art, which is a contemporary African-American art, and that's basically a paradoxal of the genre of art where race and racism is intertwined, But when you think about that, it brings you to that when you think of it in an artistic sense, it brings you to the sense of black people and the experience that attempts to dispel our notion that our race freaking matters, you know?
Right.
We really matter. So when you think about that, that's when you say post-black. Right, I think about that. And the second thing is, and I'm going to quickly say this is going to be a great topic because I had a conversation with someone the other day and I was listening to a recording about a gentleman who was telling us as a black race, like, hey, I ain't got no problem with people coming from other countries because we go to other countries. But I do have a problem with us marching about it because we first need to get justice for us. Because everything that's out there, NAACP, guess what, white people, all these other different organizations don't stand for just black. Somehow, it always wind up black plus. Start out just black, white people get involved in it. If it's, you know, if it's about black women, eventually white women, if we got to take care of us. Right, with the new presidency, if we don't get a revelation that we better take care of us first and get some justice for us and say, us black people, we not about to tolerate all of this no more. We're about to stand for us and we want some laws and we want some things taken care of for us. We're going to continue to be on the back burner of the way it's been represented and just taking these baby steps to increase. And that's probably going to be my last comment. You guys go for it, gentlemen.
Nah, that was powerful though, and you're gonna have to come back.
Here. Really,
I know you're not feeling well. I wish you well recovery, but that makes a lot of sense and actually segues us into what we're talking about. the minority youth of today are often portrayed through a distorted lens. You know, we typically live in a counter narrative every day, right? And because of that, for instance, there was a thing that happened in Oakland some years back called Shut Up and Listen. And it was about 1,000 young adults that gathered in Oakland and about 200 inner city youth that just was there face to face in their cars talking amongst each other, windows rolled down, convertibles peeled back, you know, chilling. But they were talking in small groups in dialogue about their lives, right? And the adults circulated around them and listening to the crowd and listening to their views on race, gender, education, you know, misconceptions, everything surrounding them, right? And this was staged in about 1994, and it was titled The Roof is on Fire, okay? And it was aimed to give a voice to urban teens to encourage them to express their diverse concerns, right? My question and statement in the same breath is, some of the things that were being said were things such as, everything we do today is stereotyped. If you heard this on the news, young black male, you're not going to think anything positive after that statement. What positive is going to pop in your head if you hear on the news, young black male? All right? And so the question that I pose, or the question that I say, you fast forward 20 years later, those same perspectives, those same viewpoints hold true today. That was 20 years ago, 1994, 20 plus years. Those same views can hold true today. It's the American psyche that young black and brown males continue to see through the stereotype that they're threatening, enraged, beast, beset hardships. That was 20 years ago. Do you feel that climate has shifted, has moved, or has we stayed on that same path? And how have we affected it? That's the question. How has that viewpoint been shifted, and what are we doing to do to shift that viewpoint? Because that's the same thing that holds true today. I could very much turn on the radio, young black male, I already know something happened. What you think?
You know what, I feel as if There are two schools of thought there. There is one, the perspective, which is, you know, when you perceive something, you look through it. And then there's the projection, which when you project upon something, you throw it forward. So you have perception, you have projection. And essentially, there's the perception of the black man, you know, the young black man that's happening, and then there's what's being projected upon us. When you look at the media and how the media portrays us, how the movies portray us, how rap music portrays us, how you know, how rock music portrays us, how we are portrayed, and how there is information that is projected upon us about what black is supposed to be. And then the perception of us is directly related to that projection that's in the media. So when you walk down the street, you know, people are locking their doors. You know, people are walking to the other side of the street. People are fearing what it is to be young, what it is to be black, and what it is to be different.
And you're right. Yeah, you're right. Many members of society draw from the negative stereotypes that media apply, you know, subconsciously, you know, to young black and brown men or Americans, period. Young men, women, doesn't matter. You know, them striding behind them on the sidewalk, like you said, or sitting across them from the bus, or even looking at them in the classroom, they're often seen as a threat.
But why?
That's the question.
And that is the question.
Right. Because if you thinking about the history, if you dating it back, let's go even mid 1900s. You know, we quote unquote were the inferior race, right? So where did this perception or this, you know, this whole misconception that, oh, we are the threat, we are the problem, we are the issue. Like, where did that come from? You know?
I mean, when we first got on the line, I mentioned the word crisis. And the word crisis is related to, you think about a disease. When a disease reaches a crisis point, there's death, you know? There is you know, essentially a lot of people die because they have contracted a disease and now the disease has run its full course. I believe that we're talking about the origin of where this perception and where this projection came from. I believe it all started with the lie. And a lie is a highly contagious virus of the mind. It is a social contagion, something that is communicable, which means when you speak it, it's airborne and it infects somebody else's mind. It's absorbed into belief. And all of a sudden somebody begins to believe it, that I am less than you and you are greater than me. You know, when we're talking about the superiority versus inferiority, you know, we're talking about, man, as a black man, you are less. You are three-fifths of a human being. And when you think about that, and that lie is being communicated to you, it's being dosed to you, and then all of a sudden you believe it. Quite literally, in the middle of the word belief is the word lie, Sean.
Right.
It's buried right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of it.
And we absorb it into our psyche, and all of a sudden we begin to behave as the lie dictates.
Right.
Because behavior is belief.
Eric, I'm
going to
pause you right there really quick, and I want you to continue, but we got a caller that joined us. I'm going to see if they have something to speak on. But caller, you're live here. Okay, maybe they're just listening. But if you have something, just let us know. You're definitely live. If you want to call in, once again, the number is 516-595-8311. Sorry to cut you off, brother. Keep going. Yeah, but in the middle of the belief, lies the word lie.
Exactly. But behavior is belief in action. So if we look at the behaviors of our counterparts, the people that are killing innocent black men, what would if that is your behavior, what would the belief be that supports that behavior?
Do we think, but who plays a major part in that? I said media.
I believe we all do. Because ultimately, yes, the media, what they're doing is they're dosing us with high concentrated doses of the lie.
spending
so we're
that
getting
time.
That on a regular basis. We turn on the television,
right.
and we're being called thugs. Look at all the looters.
Right.
These are not
right.
people that were fighting for their lives because Katrina, you know, had so many people. No, these are looters and thugs. And come on, man, that is a complete perception. These are people
right.
that needed bread and needed milk and needed to be able to
right.
get to a safe and dry place. And this is the media.
But they're thugs.
But they're thugs.
And
I
want to
comment on that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I said I wasn't really going to have much to say.
I knew I was going
to say. But. You know, here's one of the things, and I really was trying not to get involved, but at the end, you know, the media does put that perception out there. The television, they create, you know, other races, and I'm going to say this, other races have created things about the black race, but here's the biggest problem. We keep allowing it because
mm-hmm.
we thug each other out. Really, and it's sad now, and trust me, I'm not for all that foolishness, but it's sad because we keep thugging each other out. And let me tell you why I say that real quickly. So, okay, we're talking about the immigration situation, and a friend of mine dates a guy from Africa whose best friend is Iranian, who owns a shop in the city of New Orleans in the hood. He put his
mm-hmm.
store in the hood, as they call it, right? The hood, because that's where most lower-class black people live. They call it the hood, right? Or they might have
mm-hmm.
some lower-class white people in there, but they're going to call it the hood because they under the tax, they under the market of the income bracket of $40,000, $30,000. So
mm-hmm.
his friend asked her boyfriend what he thought about the immigration thing. You know, they had this conversation. And so then she says, why do your friend not ever hire any of the black kids in the neighborhood, patronize his store? Why they don't never, like, hire, you know, get back to the community? Let me hire one of these young boys, help him get off his feet. That'll help his mama know that he ain't in trouble. He coming from school, then he coming to work in the corner grocery store. Guess what the Iranian owner said? We don't trust them.
What's that?
We
wow.
do not mm. trust them. But guess who he get his money for? Guess who shop in his store?
Them.
The black
mm.
people
them.
That he does not trust. So my point
what?
To that
what?
Is we continue giving ammunition for these people against us. We should not be shopping. There's an Iranian store where I live. I'm in New Orleans now, y'all listeners. I'm in the city of New Orleans now. And I probably live where they call it partially the hood, but there's some homeowners, you know, it's nice, some renters, whatever. But there's an Iranian store. And guess what I go in his store for? He gave me change for a five, and I don't even buy nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, do I need to buy something? And I'm not going to buy anything because it's a fact. They never have black people working in their store. And the reason is they don't trust us, but they put their store in our community to get the black money. We have to
right.
stop thugging each other. And then we can stand up for ourselves. I mean, y'all points are right, but it's not, where does it all come from? It comes from them starting it, but then we keep it going. We keep it going against our own selves. We have to stop.
But even before that, though, and you're extremely right in your point. We have to, you know. But the deeper issue in that, I feel like, is like, where does that come from? And to your point again, like, where is he getting his thought process that, oh, we don't trust him?
Mm-hmm.
From what? Right?
That's it.
Where does that come from? And then I look at the difference, which kind of segues into my last point. I know we ain't got a lot of time as well. We're gonna have to come back on this another day or something. We got to continue this. We got about 10 minutes left, but that segues perfectly into my last point. And my last point is a statement / question: social responsibility versus elitism.
Come on, man.
Okay. Social responsibility versus elitism. To your point, as you started off, Mr. Mayors, you know, back then there were leaders, and I mean leaders. There were individuals that you can follow. They had purpose. They knew what
mm-hmm.
they wanted, and they went after, and people followed right behind them, Martin, Malcolm. They were leaders, right? And so the boys, the Talented Tenth, it was an essay that held about some criticized the arrogance of education or educated black people and socialists as saviors or heroes. You know, others don't go so far into saying, you know, what you hear all the time, they don't come back to, like you said, Ms. Wall, the hood, right? Where are
right.
the leaders?
Exactly.
Where are these leaders? I can say it's tough for me as quote unquote not a socialist or celebrity or whatever to get out and lead, but that's false. That's false truth. But it's just a little harder. We have no guidance now.
Alternative facts.
There's no guidance.
Sean, but the thing is, mm-hmm. we can't quit. See, you know why? Because I take that very, very to heart. I'm a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone come under me. I lead them with something, a challenge to be better than they were when they came into my presence, okay? The problem
right.
is, if I look at the media or I look at all them and feel like they're above me, then I would let that bother me that, you know, my impact not going to really do anything. You know what my thought process is?
Mm-hmm.
Beyonce just made more money than me. She ain't got nothing on me. And I'm talking about intellectually. I'm talking about spiritually. I'm talking about physically. I'm talking about the whole aspect. I'll stand toe-to-toe with your girl any day, anytime, any place. Your check is just bigger than mine. That's it. You
Very
have
true.
A crowd of people that you have a crowd of people that everybody wants to say, society say, oh, but she can pull a whole lot of people. They don't even know Beyonce. They just going based off of her music, her persona, what she represents on the outward. They don't know
her celebrity.
I have a crew of people that follow me because they know me. They have gotten to know the person that I am. I talk to them in the midnight hour. I communicate. I help them. I deal with them. They can touch me. These people can't touch Beyonce. So we, the individuals, the you, the Sean Williams, the Eric Mayer, the other guests on the line, we have to make sure that we understand that they just may make more money than us, they have a different position than us, but we can impact where it really counts. I leave you with this. God said the first shall be last and the last shall be first. He really want to see who's going to get out here in the trenches and deal with the people that the upper echelon don't want to deal with. See, we don't go to the community because they can give us some money, a concert ticket. We go because we want to give them something. And we just have to keep doing it. It seems like it's not working, but it really is. It's just step by step.
Yeah, and I agree. And I just feel like, you know, the those who, aside from us, and I'm talking specifically to the upper echelon or the socialists or the socialites and the celebrities, you have people that are doing it, but I feel like there's agenda, right? And they're leading
mm-hmm.
without direction. So, therefore, you can't
mm-hmm.
get a movement of people to follow behind you. You asking and demanding and suggesting all of these things, but you haven't clearly said what is it that we're going to do, what's our plan. Right, but that's why people follow you, because you have strategic agenda, you know. So
right.
I don't know. It's a touchy subject. That's what I'm saying. This is gonna be interesting. And we, like I said, we might have to come back to it. We still got a little more time. But if you want to call in, 516-595-8311. 516-595-8311. Caller, you still there?
What about that other caller? Are you there? Okay, they just missed me. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Right.
Can you hear me?
There he is, Sean.
Hi, how y'all doing? This is Gary Green.
What's going on, Mr. Green?
What's up, Gary? Not much, man. Just chiming in. Just heard a little bit, but definitely, I kind of agree with all points. It's real. It's real. Like, as I can say, it's just real out here. But I mean, to the point with the dude at the store, him saying he don't trust black people. I mean, shoot, I don't trust people. So it's like that whole stereotyping thing needs to go out the window. When you got a little white dude walking into a church and he shoot everybody, come on, man, who you trusting?
Mm.
Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Trust. That's why you get to know people. You interview people. You know what I mean? You have cameras. What do you mean trust? So I talked to somebody. I talked to some dude in Louisiana before, like a dude from India, and I was actually at work on the phone, and we just bonded off of pretty much, you know, just conversation. And he was just telling me about how in his community, you know, he tried to teach, like, his son's friends how to do businesses, and they black. He said he'd been talking to, like, you know, his son's friend's mom, because really his son's friend ministered to him on some, you know, really what's going on in America, because y'all only been here for, like, 10 years. I'm 15, but I'm going to show you what's going on with my people. So dude was pretty much telling him, like, look, I know the struggle, too. I'm you know what I mean? I'm from that struggle. I'm from another country, but this is how you guys can make money. This is what y'all need to do. He told me straight up, Gary, a lot of people think I moved here and I just got into a store. You know what I mean? He said, I lived in my car for 3 years, man. I had to struggle. You know, I had to do what I had to do. I went to school and I figured out when I was in school, they were teaching me stuff that I could just do on my own because I already worked in the store. So I just took out a loan, opened a store. But long story short, he ended up helping the kid's mom start selling her own jewelry. So it's like, it's weird because you kind of get, it's like the media not going to show you what Colin Kaepernick doing. You know what I mean? They had all these questions and stuff about, oh, he's doing this, he's doing that. Man, that's that man right. If he want to sit down, if he want to go use the bathroom while everybody pledges allegiance, that is his right. And it's it's weird how now when he's doing so much, he can do this in different ways. He can protest in different ways. I'm going to be honest, and I talk to white people, black people, all kind of people about it. I talk to probably like 30 different people a day on the average from around America. And I bring up little stuff like this on the phone just to spark conversation. And the one white guy was just like, I mean, it's just, I feel like he's at work, that's football. He can do that somewhere else. And I'm like, sir, if I'm Muslim and we at work and y'all praying Christian prayer, I don't got to come in there. And that's work. You know what I mean? Like, I have the freedom of speech, but you don't see the media now showing Colin Kaepernick donating to this organization, Colin Kaepernick in Oakland, communities doing this and that. So it's like, it's a catch-22. It's a dirty trick because there's great people out here, and some of them aren't, you know, your Beyoncé's or whatever. I mean, all those people just, they're entertainers. They don't ask for none of, you know what I mean, as far as, like, the representative. Right. So I ain't going to worry about that. But as far as, like, it's people doing stuff, but they don't show that. But I guarantee you, if Colin Kaepernick got caught drunk driving or, you know what I mean, just did.
Oh, everybody gonna know it.
Right.
They gonna blast
know
that.
It. Right. So it's like, it's dirty. Like Eric said, it's the media, man, they put dirty tricks on us, and it's like, I trust my people, you know what I mean, the people I know. Like, I look at my mom as a leader because I know her. I've seen her walk. I see what she do. I respect Sean as a leader because I know his walk. I respect Eric as a leader because I know his walk. Other people, man, I don't know if this preacher, he a pedophile. So, you know what I mean? It's kind of hard for people to put trust in certain people. We don't know if Jesse Jackson getting paid off. You know what I mean? It's just like a dirty trick. Right. Like that. And that's me as a young person.
And you're right,
because
that's
like,
the part, Mr. Green, that's the part where I say we can't touch them. And that's what I mean
right.
when I say that. And I know, Sean, your time is running out. We can't touch them.
Yeah.
You see my walk. I see Eric walk. We follow, even though we may see it on social media sometimes, and sometimes on the phone, and sometimes in person, we're able to see that. We can't see what these other people are doing. And so as a community, like, you know, Sean, I mean, you know, we have to push it as hard as we can in our own. We got to first try to consolidate the black race, you know, and not meaning that we ain't going to deal with other races. We're going to deal with them, but we still got to care about us.
Right. This is my last name.
45 seconds.
We doing it now. That's how I feel. Talking about it, we sparking ideas now.
Exactly.
So we putting it in motion.
Good.
30 seconds.
Good.
Eric, go.
Man, I appreciate being on the call. I really feel as if we've got a really powerful. You need a whole hour for this subject. I have so much more to say.
Yeah,
than I know,
man.
We all do.
I know.
But, man, this conversation is great to have started, man. Thanks for having me on the call.
Yes. Well, stay tuned for part two. We might have to come back on and bring everybody on the line that's on now. Everybody called in. I appreciate you. This is A to Z, it's Blog Talk Radio. I appreciate you. Have a good day.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.